Now we're joined by the experts at ETF Trends and ETF Database, the world's largest independent ETF-centric source for top industry news, trends, and insights.
By keeping rates so low, that is in effect driving investor money into the equity market. They're not just telling you what positions they've got, they're telling you precisely what trades they've made. It's a little bit of a who's who of the corporate bond space.
Dave, welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Well, if only we had a few things to talk about, Nate. I don't know what we're going to talk about today.
I am always so ambitious with the podcast topics. I always try to shoehorn in like 4 hours worth of content into one, but I like it. It's fun. So look, let's actually start on the Bitcoin ETF topic, because I think once we get into DeFi, it's all over, right? We're not going to have time for anything else.
So let's start with Bitcoin.
That's right. So look, you and I haven't chatted since the first Bitcoin futures ETFs rolled out. I offered the same opportunity last week to Laura Krieger. I feel like you're at least owed a few minutes to comment on this, just given that you and I have literally covered this on the podcast for years. So just briefly, what have been your thoughts on investor demand for these products, how they've traded, position limits? Just give us your first impressions.
Yeah, to be honest, it feels a little anticlimactic because it's kind of gone according to plan. And I don't mean that to make it sound like we were all geniuses, but I think a lot of us in the ETF side of the house had a few priors going in, that the structure would work fine. Check, that's true. That there'd be a lot of initial demand. Check, that's true. That it would trade like water. Check, that's true. So the only thing that's really up for grabs is how's it done since the launch? And the answer is it slotted itself in as a bridge trading tool, which is exactly kind of where we were talking about this slotting in, you know, a couple weeks ago when we thought we weren't going to get a physical, but we would get a futures, right? So what you get in the futures is a lot of liquidity, a lot of bridging capability for people who are hedging risk across multiple markets. That's great. There's a natural cap on how much activity like that there is. That's a very different group of traders in a very different market than, say, some advisor who wants to put 4% of his client's money into Bitcoin and is looking for vehicles. I don't think BITO and BTF, its major competitor right now, are necessarily going to be that for most financial advisors and most investors. I think it's going to remain a very liquid, you know, one basis point spread trading vehicle for people who are looking to play, quote unquote, crypto intraday. That's great. That's a useful tool. It's really helpful in risk management. It's helpful in liquidity management. But I don't think it's the be-all, end-all. I think most people are still looking for better solutions for long-term exposure.
You mentioned the structure working fine, which is absolutely true. I know the BITO, they had a roll into December futures a bit early, but that's not really a big surprise. But one thing I did want to ask you about, there was this piece in Bloomberg last week from Katie Greenfield, who reported that the reason additional Bitcoin futures ETFs haven't launched yet is because of issues with futures commission merchants, FCMs. I got to tell you, I feel like I learn something new every day. But, you know, we were expecting launches from VanEck and Galaxy, AdvisorShares, and all of those have been delayed, apparently at least partially because of this issue. Can you explain this again? I know this doesn't get into the ETF structural side. It's really on the other side. But what's the role of FCMs and what's the issue here?
So a futures, so an FCM effectively acts like a clearing member in the old membership exchange model, right? They're the one who is technically interfacing with the entire settlement infrastructure. An FCM is the one who technically collects margin from the broker, from the client who's actually purchasing a futures contract or entering a futures contract, I should say. So they have to collect that margin. They're the ones who disperse the cash on settlement. So they sort of act as this agent. They're not quite a market maker. They're not necessarily out there buying, you know, setting the prices. Most of them, of course, are also market makers, right? I mean, everybody does everything in this business, right? But the FCM has this sort of plumbing role in the system. And one of the issues there is they're on the hook for capital, right? So they're the ones that are sort of one of the guaranteeing members of the settlement process. And therefore, if you're asking a lot of a narrow market, which the Bitcoin futures market was pretty narrow in terms of number of participants for obvious reasons, because you have to offset that risk outside of the traditional economic markets, that's an issue. So I think this is probably a very short-term issue. I think this is a matter of people, rearranging a few balance sheet items to get the capital they need to be able to feel confident that they could, be one of the major players behind another, billion-dollar Bitcoin futures ETF. So I think it is a short-term stopgap issue, not a long-term hurdle.
And my guess is they were probably slightly caught off guard just with the initial demand for the ProShares Bitcoin Strategy ETF. You had $1.2 billion went into that fund pretty quickly, and it's plateaued. There hasn't been much into that fund since then. Any idea how Valkyrie got around this? Like, was it just good luck, good timing on their part in launching?
Right. Yeah, some of it is that they're smaller. The other thing is that, because these really kind of launched at the same time, we're talking about, 72 hours between approvals or something like that in terms of business hours. So I most of these deals and setups were already put in place. I think this is a bit of a pause from some of those major players. There are only so many players in the market right now that are doing this kind of work, and they all need to make sure that they feel comfortable with their capital requirements.
By the way, one of the great ETF mysteries right now is why Invesco pulled their Bitcoin futures launch. So if my timing's right, they could have launched the same day as ProShares or the day after. Are you surprised they pulled that launch?
Not so much. I mean, once you know you're not going to be first in something like this, it doesn't strike me as a terrible idea to have a little bit of a strategic think on this. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Valkyrie somehow now owns second place and nobody will ever supplant them. I think actually second through whatever place in this space are wide open. I think it will be difficult for people to come in and replace the liquidity of Bitto because they already got the options contracts listed on it. So that's going to be the default for a lot of investors. And we should point out that's another huge component here, right? Most folks have not been able to get any optionality into their crypto exposure without really going deep into the crypto weeds, right? Trading crypto derivatives on native crypto exchanges. That is way beyond what most people who are not crypto natives are going to want to do. So having options on Bitto really opens up that market for people who may just want to take a flyer or maybe want to legitimately hedge. So I think the second through fifth positions here are really wide open. I don't think it matters who launches next to get that. I think it's who launches better.
All right, before we move on, I ask you this every time we cover this topic. Any new thoughts on timing for a spot Bitcoin ETF? We continue to see filings. BlockFi yesterday, we've had a ton of issuers throw their name in the hat. Any thoughts on what kind of timing we're looking at there?
Well, let's see. I'm turning 55. I'm planning on retiring when I'm about 62, so that's about my guess.
Seven years.
Look, anybody who has actually cracked open the infrastructure bill and seen, like, none of the things that everybody was all up in arms about crypto got out of the bill. They're all still in there. All these issues around, is every person who's managing a swap pool all of a sudden a broker with KYC requirements? All that stuff's still in there. That's getting signed into law. The amount of stuff the crypto community has to get through before we can even talk about getting a Bitcoin ETF launch is enormous. And I think this is one of the big problems with decentralization. If there's nobody in charge, there's nobody to go to Washington. And that is, I think, going to be one of the Achilles heels of this next 2 to 3 year window. The community at large really needs to get their you-know-what together.
All right, that's the perfect segue. And by the way, I was reading some of that bill last night. I think you're right. We've talked about this before, that the innovation occurring in crypto is happening at such a fast pace that regulations have no chance of keeping up with it at this point. I mean, I feel like D.C. is so far behind, politicians are so far behind what's going on here that it's going to be difficult. But look, anytime I talk Bitcoin ETFs, as we just were, there's always a healthy contingent of people where there's like angry pushback, and the response is, well, why are we trying to wrap this new technology of Bitcoin and crypto into an old investment vehicle? And I feel like their sentiment is, instead, we should be trying to figure out how to tokenize ETFs, right? Effectively wrap ETFs in crypto, not the other way around. Now, again, with a caveat that you and I could easily spend hours discussing this, and maybe we will at some point. I want to touch on the regulatory part, but I'll just simply ask, is that where this is all heading at some point, that ETFs and everything else, whether you want to say mutual funds or stocks, bonds, that everything will ultimately be tokenized?
Oh, God, yes, absolutely. To me, that is as clear as looking outside and seeing clouds and knowing at some point they will part and there will be sun and blue sky. It seems utterly inconceivable to me that we don't end up in a world of tokenized asset management. It is just a matter of time. Tokenization, I mean, if you think about it, share certificates are tokenized asset management. They're just really old tech. And all we keep doing is changing the nature and the way we use the tokens that signify ownership and economic interest. Now, the problem we have is we've now invented the next obvious, incredible technology for doing this, and we skipped the entire part of the process where we build a regulatory and legal framework to enable it. So we've now got a, I'm sure there are examples, but in my experience, this is a little bit unprecedented. Even in the internet, you know, back in the early 90s, and I was on all these standards committees, you know, trying to figure out how we're going to move money around the internet. Even then, we were trying to figure out the legal framework before anybody went out there and built the tech. Now we've done the opposite. We built the tech. It works. We know how to do instantaneous settlement. We know how to do forking. We know how to do all of these incredible things that you need to be able to do tokenized asset management. We just have zero regulatory infrastructure that allows it.
For the layman, what does this look like? So I don't know, if you take creation redemption, does that happen via smart contracts? You mentioned instantaneous trade settlement. Like, just high level, what does this look like if you tokenize ETFs?
So the really simple example is look at something called Index Co-op, at Index Co-op on Twitter, or you can find it anywhere you want, or Index Coop, if you want to say it that way. What these guys have done is they developed a standard Ethereum smart contract, which is in of itself a set of instructions to acquire various tokens that are themselves also on the Ethereum blockchain that represent digital assets. Those tokens we think of as being part of the metaverse, if you will. And so any exposure that you can bake into a blockchain token, whether through a liquidity pool, which is how those things tend to do, where you're trading one asset versus another, or whether it's something like what FTX is doing in Europe, where they're actually holding Tesla stock in an account and then tokenizing that and trading the tokens that represent the amount in the actual brokerage account. Once you do that and you have a Tesla token, now I can just take that same smart contract at Index Co-op and say, hey, we're going to put a Tesla token in there. And by the way, this is the weighting mechanism baked into the contract. Anybody who wants some of this index, just go to the smart contract, put in your US dollar coin, you get one of these tokens out that is the index. That in turn is ownership of these underlying tokens. So this is a solved living product in many places in the DeFi space already. The only problem is we're not trading tokens that have any legal claim on assets we associate with investing, i.e. stocks, bonds, other securities.
Do you think we ultimately end up with 24/7 markets in stocks and bonds and everything else?
Absolutely, right? And again, the only thing holding us back is the regulatory environment. If you live in Germany right now, you can just sit on your FTX account and trade Tesla all day long, right? And there's an open market for it, and you can trade it against, you can do direct swap of, you know, Tesla versus IBM if you can get somebody to take the other side of that, right? So there's all sorts of incredible stuff that is already there. It's none of it's in the U.S.
Okay, so on the regulatory side, it's interesting. So I think it was last year, the SEC, when Chairman Jay Clayton was there, they actually messaged that they'd be open to the tokenization of ETFs, and that clearly it would fall under their regulatory purview. So point being, this is already on the radar of the SEC, but what do you think's realistic here? I know it's a shot in the dark, but for the SEC and regulators to catch up to that innovation I was alluding to earlier, how what time frame are we looking at?
I think we're in this very dangerous and exciting liminal space. If I was a betting person, I don't think we get this right. Like, I'm not a Pollyanna about this. I don't see evidence that Washington is about to release a regulatory framework which lets us all go, aha, all we need to do is stand up a blockchain that looks like this and has these kinds of participants and has this kind of, you know, ability for regulators to do transparent oversight, and then everything will be fine. Like, that's what we need. We need a comprehensive, securitized crypto regulatory framework. We ain't going to get one, I don't think. I hope I'm wrong. So instead, what we're going to do is be fighting all of these skirmishes around the edges of the big problem. Those are still really important skirmishes to fight and win. They're going to show up in places like what we're seeing in stablecoins, which is, you know, one of the key functions of this. If you're going to have tokenized asset management, tokenized cash is step one. So everybody who's like, why are they focused on stablecoins? That's why, because if you can't talk about cash, you can't talk about anything else. So from there, we're going to then fight about, well, okay, how do you actually do securities transactions on a blockchain in a way that the SEC will let you? And we'll get there slowly. And a lot of the folks in DeFi are getting there. I know you want to talk about WisdomTree. That's part of the bridging here.
No, it's been frustrating, I guess, from my standpoint, because you look at something like a Bitcoin ETF, which seems so simple from a regulatory standpoint, but they haven't been able to get that done. So we start branching out and talking about tokenizing assets. And I'm skeptical. I agree with you in terms of building out a regulatory framework. The stable coins are interesting to me because there's been talk about them falling under banking laws, which that opens up a whole nother can of worms. But yeah, on the WisdomTree side, Dave, I mentioned at the top the WisdomTree Digital Short-Term Treasury Fund. So WisdomTree filed for this back in April. The fund itself is nothing noteworthy, right? It would hold U.S. treasuries with maturities of between 1 and 3 years.
But by definition, the most boring thing they could possibly think of to put in.
100%.
But yeah, what's 100% intentional.
Yeah. And what's interesting is the ownership of the fund shares will be recorded on the blockchain. And shareholders would need a blockchain wallet, which I believe WisdomTree is going to provide through an app to hold this. Have you crawled into this in any detail? Have you looked at that filing? What do you think?
Deep down this rabbit hole. So the idea here is instead of using a traditional transfer agency mechanism, which is a central server that keeps track of the fact that Nate owns 12 shares of whatever, they're going to instead record that ownership on the Stellar blockchain. Stellar is a different blockchain. It has some security features. It has some KYC features that make this possible. Specifically, what that means, however, is that you know that you can only transact directly in this through a Stellar wallet. I apologize if I get all this wrong. Things are changing so fast they could have refiled this and completely changed the tech. But when I looked at this 3 weeks ago, that was the idea, that the way you get around a lot of these KYC issues is I can only buy this fund if I have a Stellar wallet on my phone, presumably. And when I go buy shares, that wallet has embedded in it some of that KYC ID, right? So they know who I am. They understand my tax situation, all that kind of stuff. So it allows the wallet to act effectively as my account from a legal and regulatory perspective. So this is a 180-degree opposite approach to how you solve this problem, which is build something designed to be regulated under the current system and start playing with that. And I think that's where we're at on this. I think this is literally a start playing with it mode. I don't think that WisdomTree or anybody else thinks that all of a sudden there's going to be $1 billion in this treasury fund. I think the idea is get it trading, get it moving, see what people do with it, see whether you can generate some adoption. Now, that brings up the question, okay, well, if these things are now tracked on the Stellar blockchain, can I, as a holder, then say, put my shares into a pool so that I could do liquidity staking? Could I put them as part of a swap so other people can get exposure to my investment, but I'm giving them that exposure in exchange for some collateral effectively? All of those things remain to be seen. All of them start breaking a lot of the regulatory issues. But that's the idea. Let's start playing with it.
Yeah, I think that's the key, right? It's a bridge. As you've talked about a lot, I've mentioned in the past, this is a first step down that path. And interestingly, you actually flagged some comments for me last week that were on WisdomTree's latest earnings call. And I actually want to read these real quick, and then you can comment on them if you want. These are from WisdomTree CEO Jonathan Steinberg. So he said, quote, ETFs are almost 30 years old now. I think the next 30 years, you're going to be talking about regulated tokens. It's going to prove to be the new wrapper. He also said, quote, I believe that over the next 5 years, we will be recognized as a DeFi business that has an ETF business, or said a different way, we're in the business of transparent exposures, whether we're doing it in regulated tokens or through ETFs. Those were striking to me. This is coming from a top 10 ETF issuer.
Well, remember that they're playing in other markets than this one. They're already a quite successful player in the European crypto ETF market, right? So they're at the front end of this, just not in the United States. Again, with everything else, we're so blind to the innovation that's happening around the rest of the world because of this regulatory gap. So it's not surprising for me to hear Jono talking about it that way. They've been clear that this is the future of the business for a while. I think they're one of the few firms that actually has the court vision to see this out. My concern actually is that they're a publicly traded company, and a lot of the investments we're talking about here are going to be multi-year, right? I mean, the same conversation about the metaverse, right? We're talking about a 5 to 10 year build out, not a next quarter build out. Public investors tend to be very fickle. So I wish them a ton of luck. I'm fully supportive of the exploration that they're making here. I worry a little bit about the short-term nature of shareholders.
Well, we'll have to pause there on this topic. I have a feeling you and I are going to be covering this throughout the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
That's right. But Dave, great stuff. You want to stick around here and talk ETF taxation?
Nothing would make me happier.
All right. Hang tight. That was ETF Trends, Dave Nottig.